Well, how appropriate is that song for our special guest, Rosemary Ellen Guiley? We think the world of her. Her latest book that she wrote with the traveling psychologist Michael Breen, The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. That will give you a little bit of flavor of what's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. She, of course, is a leading paranormal researcher, investigator, author, more than 60 books published. She wrote the book with me called Talking to the Dead. And her latest work, of course, is here, The Road to Strange, that she wrote with Michael Breen, who is the traveling psychologist. Rosemary, how'd you like that song as your introduction?
You know, I think it's the only song that I know of that was ever written with my name in
it. I know it. That's why we play it. I couldn't find anything else. And, you know, it said some things like, she's kind of crazy. And I'm going, that's not her, but it's a great song. So what the heck, huh?
Well, it is, but I do get into some crazy topics.
Yes, you do. And as a matter of fact, of all the years I've known you, where we've talked about dreams and ghosts and werewolves, this is the very first time I have seen you handle UFOs and aliens. First time.
It is, George, and I don't know what took me so long, because I have been interested in ETs, aliens, and UFOs my entire life since I was a little kid. And I have written about them in articles and some of my other books, but I've never done a dedicated book on this. And that's why it was such a great thing to team up with Michael Breen and do this collection of eyewitness accounts, because eyewitness accounts are really some of the best evidence we have for the alien presence on Earth. And the book really makes for some powerful testimonies.
Is this a book? How would you categorize a book? Let me ask you that.
It's a collection. It's an anthology of first-person eyewitness accounts, people who we have them in categories, people who see mystery lights in the sky, have encounters with actual craft, have face-to-face encounters with aliens, including some abductions, and then experience some of the high strangeness that goes around UFOs and aliens, missing time, time slips, portals into seemingly other dimensions, men in black encounters. And we let the witness tell the story and the impact on their life. And I think that's really important. How are people changed, for better or for worse, and it can go either way, when they have contact with something that they know is not of Earth origin? And then every story is followed by a commentary where we put the experience into context with the bigger picture of UFOs. Are there other similar stories? Is there a pattern going on here? What sense can we make of this about the alien presence on Earth? And aliens have been topping the news a lot lately in the last year.
Well, they sure have.
Disclosure items and video footage. I think it's one of the greatest mysteries that human beings grapple with is the presence of otherworldly beings on this planet.
How did you find the eyewitnesses?
Most of the stories were collected by Michael Breen, and he's a world traveler. He's famous as the travel psychologist. He's been to over 100 countries around the world. He's been very involved in ufology in the past. And one of the things that's intrigued Michael is, how are people affected by travel? And some of it is just the nitty-gritty of travel, getting along in a foreign country and making sure you're safe. But Michael found that people also have extraordinary experiences when they travel. They get opened up in unusual ways. And so he has, over the years, collected almost 2,000 accounts involving the paranormal, the mystical, UFOs, strange phenomena. And so have I, and some of the cases come from my own files as well. So we have stories. The earliest story we have goes to the 1930s, and then we have stories right up to the present, representing the broad spectrum of alien contact.
You've done a remarkable job condensing that into this book, The Road to Strange. And it is indeed, Rosemary, a road to strange, isn't it?
Well, it is, and even though a lot of people had their experiences right in their own backyards, you know, they weren't taking a big trip to a foreign country, it's still travel to something else. It's travel to the unknown. And many times when people have an experience like this, they feel catapulted into another reality where they're still connected to Earth, but they're somewhere else having an extraordinary experience.
The skeptics of UFO visitations keep saying we don't have any hard evidence. We just don't have any hard evidence. But let me ask you, in a court of law, eyewitnesses can put somebody away, can get them convicted. So in a court of ufology, why can't we say these eyewitnesses are the evidence?
To me, they provide some of the best evidence for the alien presence. And yet, this is the first evidence to be derided, ridiculed, dismissed. Eyewitnesses have a terrible time with the media, with the public, even their own friends and family.
Pilots, police officers, people that you would normally not think they would make up silly things, right? They are good eyewitness testimony experts.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And we have some very poignant stories in the book about how people couldn't even convince their own family members of what they experienced. And it's a very odd contradiction, because on one hand, we, the public, we clamor for the evidence. We want to know, where is the proof? The truth is out there. Where is the proof of alien beings? And yet when eyewitnesses come forward, what happens to them? They're treated very poorly. They're treated like idiots, or they were hallucinating or drunk, or it couldn't have happened. It was just clouds, strange reflected lights, whatever. We find all kinds of ridiculous explanations to explain away what really is right in front of us, which is the truth of the alien presence.
We'll take calls with Rosemary next hour, your questions, of course, and maybe even your stories of some of the high strangeness. And we'll get some of the accounts that are in the book. I'll have Rosemary talk about those. The high strangeness portion of the subtitle. You've got The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. Tell me about high strangeness.
Well, that's the sort of the sub-phenomena that often happen to people after they've had some sort of contact, like with a craft or even a mystery light, because many times people are profoundly affected by moving lights they see in the sky that seem to be intelligent and reacting just to them. And then, of course, face-to-face alien contact. People often have outbreaks of other kinds of phenomena. They might experience missing time, where they can't account for things when they're out on the road or doing something. They might feel that they've slipped into another dimension suddenly. They might be visited by mysterious entities called Men in Black, who want to threaten them about talking about their experiences. There are even outbreaks of haunting phenomena and poltergeist phenomena in the home. People might start feeling that there's a presence that's always with them now, that's watching them, that knows where they are all the time. Many people say that after they've had a close contact, that the aliens, whoever they are, suddenly have them in particular on their radar, and anytime they want, they can come and get them. And that leaves people very vulnerable. Many people go through a lot of psychological upset and even trauma after having these contact experiences.
Rosemary, what do you think of saying you, and you pointed some of this out, but the latest video that pilots see, UFOs, and the disclosure basically that the government spent $22 million to study UFOs? What do you think of all that?
I think that it's about time that we had some more real disclosure. I don't think we're ever going to get a big political announcement. There's not going to be anything like that, but rather measured disclosure. And I believe that's what's actually going on now with the release of these videos, and information is being sort of put out in a measured time and pace to the public, to condition us more to the alien presence. I think we're going to see more of this, more videos, more people from high government positions talking about what they know. We might even see some evidence of unknown materials, movies, television programs. All of this is being very carefully monitored, how we are reacting to it, because there is an alien presence on Earth. Some of it's good, some of it's not good.
Well, I was going to say, have you come across testimony and experts, people like David Jacobs who have researched this, that say that these visitations are not good ones?
Yes, indeed. And in fact, you know, for years we had a lot of attention on the abduction phenomenon. And the abductions were not pleasant, terrifying. And people were, and they still go on. We still have these kinds of experiences. But I have talked to a lot of people who say that, well, there's a very threatening alien presence that's deeply secret and deeply underground. And it doesn't bode well for human beings. There are people on the other side of the fence who say, well, there are plenty of helpful aliens who have made themselves present and known to help us counter these forces and help us with our own spiritual development. I think it's a real mixed bag out there, but I would not underestimate the negative side of it.
Rosemary, take a story or two, if you can, before the break, and just kind of tell us a little bit about these dramatic accounts.
One of the most gripping stories for me was the roadside abduction, where three sisters are returning home from a party, and they have missing time, and they can't account for it. They're 4 hours late, and their family is convinced that they just sort of got lost. But one of the sisters is curious. She contacts Dr. Hynek, J. Allen Hynek. And he convinces her to do a past life, or not a past life, but a regression. She undergoes regression and discovers how they were all taken aboard a craft. And, you know, given the examination, it's a terrifying experience for her. And the alien in particular that terrifies her the most, she describes in great detail. She calls him the witch doctor.
Oh, geez.
And this alien is very tall. With translucent skin and red veins and kind of an insect-like bulbous head.
Like a praying mantis?
Not a praying mantis, just sort of insect eyes and kind of a bulby insect-like mm-hmm. head, tall and gangly, and it emanates this hostile, malevolent, even evil aura. She's absolutely terrified of this being, to the point where she cannot even revisit the episodes with this being in regression again. And then all three sisters are returned to their car. They're just slid into their car. They find themselves on the way home where they thought they were going. Two of the sisters don't want to know. They don't want to get regressed. And the one who did the regression wasn't certain that she wanted to know more because it was just too terrifying to contemplate.
That is scary. What do you think the agenda is with something like that?
Well, on one hand, we have to wonder, George, because we've had so many accounts of abductions, even going back to the Tujunga Canyon case and from the 1950s, of people being taken aboard craft and given physical examinations, having their sexual material extracted for what they are told is a hybrid breeding program. And how many times do aliens, if they're superior beings, how many times do they have to examine us like lab rats, which is what people feel like? They say, I felt like an animal, like a lab rat, like a lower form of life. How many times does this have to happen before they get us figured out, you know? And so it's puzzling why this happens over and over again. You can see some sense to it if there really is a some sort of breeding program going on. But we also might just be a genetic experience and experiment. And I've thought about that theory a lot as to whether or not we were originally seeded by other beings as some sort of experiment, and we're just periodically monitored the way we monitor tagged animals in the wild.
Your co-writer, Michael Bryan, wrote and interviewed Dr. J. Allen Hynek before he died.
He did, and we included it in the book as an appendix because even though this interview took place some time ago, It was almost prophetic in what Hynek said about, you know, what are we doing? How are we going about our search for the alien presence? And wouldn't it be amazing if they're right under our noses all the time?
Was the interview done after he left Project Blue Book?
Yes, it was.
Because he became a believer. One of the most dramatic stories I've ever heard in the field of ufology, Rosemary. I remember I was just a kid working part-time at a television station in Detroit when we had the Dexter, Michigan sightings, and Hynek showed up, held a news conference, and told the world, swamp gas. And it was a great story. Witnesses came forward. They said they saw the objects in the woods and things like that, but he said, swamp gas. And it haunted him for his entire career, because after he left Project Blue Book and started his own studies of ufology and became a believer, and there were some cases that I'll cite a little bit later on what really convinced him, I think he kicked himself for the rest of his life for saying it was swamp gas. Remember that?
It was a very unfortunate remark, and I have to give Hynek credit because he did change his mind. And, you know, there are always researchers in the field, especially on the skeptical side. They start out being very hard line, and no matter what the evidence is that they encounter, they stick to that hard line. And Hynek was open-minded, and he did become convinced that there really is something strange going on.
And one of the stories that did that for him was the Lonnie Zamora, the police officer from Socorro, New Mexico, who saw what he thought was a tipped-over white car. As he got closer to it, he realized that it was a spacecraft or something with two occupants who looked like little human beings who got in the craft and took off. And, the fact that it came from a dedicated police officer who never changed his story, I think that helped convince Hynek there was something to this.
It did, and he had other cases, too, where the witnesses were so credible and it was so hard to explain away the evidence that he really did come around and change his mind. So, you know, he's one of the towering figures, in my view, in ufology. He started out to debunk and wound up with another point of view, and that's very much to his credit.
Wrote the book Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which Spielberg turned into a movie. That was pretty dramatic.
He came up with that classification system, which now has been expanded, the levels of contact. And people are having more and more dramatic contact, you know, face-to-face with alien beings. Some of them take place in this reality. Some of them seem to take place in what we would call a matrix reality.
Rosemary, do you think the media nowadays accepts this as a great story, or do you think they still think it's strange and unusual and wacky?
There's a lot of mileage to UFOs. Anybody in the media knows that you can get a lot of play out of a UFO alien story. So it's always big news. And people are interested. I think we sincerely want to know, are aliens visiting us? What are they doing? How are we encountering them? But yet, anytime the stories are in the media, or no, I shouldn't say anytime, but so many times when they're in the media, they're played as a joke. It's kind of a ha-ha. Somebody said they had an encounter with an alien. Oh, wow, isn't that weird? What's the matter with that person? And yet people from every walk of life, mainstream people, credible people, are having these experiences. They're not nutcases like so much of the media wants to write them off as.
Good point. Stay with us, Rosemary. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us, her latest book, The Road to Strange. Rosemary, why don't you give us another possible dramatic account, and we'll get on to more questions for you.
Another story from California concerning five UFOs that hovered over a farmhouse. And the family, the woman telling the story, her name is Anita. And this goes under a section, I Know What I Saw, and that has become such a mantra in eyewitness UFO accounts that people say, look, I know what I saw. And this occurred in 1966. This is a dairy farm, and the family's eating dinner, and these UFOs come overhead. There are crafts that can be seen, and including a very big one. And two brothers go off, and they jump in a vehicle and take off. They want to investigate. The mother, two sisters go outside to look. The father, interestingly, will not go out. And we see this reaction in people. They don't want to know. They don't want to be confronted by something they can't explain. And this one sister, Anita, has the most dramatic experience. Her mother and other sister go back in the house, but this one craft, which is huge, and it's circular, and it's got pulsating colored lights around the rim, it hovers very low over the ground right over her, like it's targeted her. And she wonders what's going on and what's going to happen. Meanwhile, her father is practically clinging to the dinner table, saying, oh, it's just a government thing, just a government thing. He doesn't even want to look. The sister goes and hides in a closet. She's terrified. The brothers come back. They seem to have had some missing time, about 45 minutes of missing time, which is never accounted for. And she goes into literally kind of a post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome where she can't sleep at night. Are these beings suddenly know who she is? Are they coming back? She sends out mental messages. Well, if you're going to come back, don't bother my family. You know, just bother me. She worries about this for a long time, unable to sleep and feeling like her whole life now she's on some sort of cosmic radar with these beings that she doesn't know who they are, why they're here, or what they want. And that was a very dramatic sighting with the craft. We have an illustration of it in the book. Many people see these circular craft with pulsating colored lights around the rim, and they feel targeted by something intelligent. And they wonder, did I draw this in? Did it notice me for some reason? Or was I just sort of a random target that they fixed on and now they know who I am? So it's an interesting story because of the play out of the psychological effect. And again, we have within a family complete denial, partial acceptance, and then someone who is trying to embrace the experience and, for better or for worse, make sense out of it.
Interesting take. Now, you were talking about how some of these encounters seem to be negative, but others seem to be positive. How come?
They do, and in fact, we're seeing more of the positive encounters coming out now in the last few years. People talking about alien beings that are pleasant, friendly, respectful, that they have a benevolent purpose. People feel positively transformed by that. And we do have some examples of that in the book. Jacqueline Smith, for example, is very well known for her work in contact and also being a hybrid. And she has come forward with her own hybrid story about how she discovered her star origins. And some of her experiences were initially kind of scary when she was much younger, but then as she learned more about these beings and that they were part of a cosmic family of hers, she then grew into this role of feeling like her purpose on Earth, or one of her purposes, is to educate people about this and also acclimatize people to the fact that we are part of star families, and she feels that also some of her psychic and healing gifts were enabled or enhanced by her star family contacts. So it runs on both sides of the fence, and I don't think that we can say it's one or the other. You know, people you know, often want to pigeonhole all the aliens into a single agenda. They're here to eat us, kill us, subjugate us, help us, save us, whatever. And I don't think it's black and white like that. I think it's a real mixed bag of different kinds of contact experiences. But I am glad to see the positive ones coming out more, because we've had such an emphasis on negative experiences for so long. You know, back in the early days, post-World War II, the 60s, 70s, we had the Space Brothers, and many of them were rather benign, but they were here to give us warnings about the planet and what we were doing on the planet. And then we shifted into a more negative scenario with the abductions, missing time, things like that.
And those are probably very real.
They are very real. I think we have both going on. And now we're seeing more people coming forward with the positive end of it. So it gives people a lot of material to consider.
Let's talk a little bit about crop formations and how that ties into the field of ufology. What do you think is happening there?
For a good number of years, I was very involved in crop circle research in the 1990s into the mid to late 1990s. And there is a UFO component to them people out in the fields doing the observing or exploring crop circles, they would be out at night doing field observations, would often see strange UFO activity in areas where crop circles were found. And so we've always had questions about, well, what's the connection there?
Right.
And mystery lights also have been seen over the fields, especially in England. We have a very interesting story from Ron Russell, who is a well-known crop circle researcher, in the book. And he interviewed some young people who spent the night on Silbury Hill doing some crop watching and sky watching. And they witnessed little orange lights that turned into pods, tetrahedron-shaped pods, just shape-shifted into pods, containing little beings about the size of children, 4 to maybe 5 feet tall, sitting in lotus positions. And this is an element to the whole UFO, even contact spectrum experience, where there's odd aspects to it that don't seem to make logical sense. And I think this is why so many experiences often get dismissed. The trickster element, the weird things. What are beings doing in tetrahedrons sitting in lotus positions flying around Silbury Hill? And these pods contract into lights. The lights fly over a field. This is where a lot of crop circles have been formed in England. Beings get out and walk around in the field, get back in their little pods, and the pods become balls of light again, and they take off. Nobody knows who they are, where they're from, or what they're doing.
And where they're going.
But these sorts of experiences are reported with, a fair amount of frequency in connection with crop circles. And some people believe that crop circles are messages from alien beings that we need to decode, that they activate something in consciousness. It's also well known that people have been out making crop circles. And who knows, maybe they're getting inspiration from some otherworldly source for what they're doing.
And, do you think they're symbols? I mean, why can't they be a little more direct? I mean, it takes a genius to figure out what they are.
Well, in a way, yes, and in a way, no. If you look at symbols, symbols contain far more than written words. They act on consciousness on an intuitive level. And we can see this throughout history, where symbols have represented even entire concepts, beings, relationships among things. And so putting symbols down in the crop, and then when people, they can only really be fully appreciated from the air, from an aerial photograph. My personal feeling is I believe that they act on consciousness in a way that would be far more powerful than if aliens just wrote script out and handed us a piece of paper with a message on it. There's something about symbols that are part of our heritage, part of our culture, our collective consciousness, and these symbols are being used to, I think, awaken things in us on a very deep level.
Are people changed by these alien encounters?
They certainly are, George, and some people are changed for the positive. They say, well, you know, I always wondered about this. I didn't have any strong feelings about it, but now I'm a believer. I've seen something. I know what I saw. I've seen something I can't explain. I'm now a believer in the alien presence. And other people have negative reactions, even if it's just to seeing unexplained lights in the sky. You know, everybody reacts differently to phenomena. And they're very unsettled by that because it's something that shakes up their worldview. And then if they also run into ridicule or denial from other people that they attempt to talk to, that can reinforce a kind of a psychological uncertainty. It's like, well, was it real or was it not? And what do I do with this information? Do I stuff it away and ignore it, or do I try and understand it? Some people are propelled into intense study. We have a couple of experiencers in the book who say that they had to read everything they could about UFOs. They had to learn everything they could because they wanted to understand it, what they had experienced.
Well, it's pretty dramatic, and what fascinates me probably more than anything, the missing time aspect that comes to one of these apparent abductees. I mean, why aren't they allowed to remember?
Some of the experiences may just be so traumatic that the individual just simply does not recall. People who undergo very high levels of stress, that's a common reaction to not recall the all the details. And some of it may be sort of an amnesia that's implanted by the alien beings as maybe a cover for what they're doing. They don't want people to know exactly what they're up to, and so they might give people hypnotic suggestions or some other kind of memory impairment technique that makes them forget. And regression is one way to recover some of these memories. It's an imperfect method, depending upon how the regression is conducted. You know, you want to make sure you don't, like, lead the witness. But there have been some very dramatic accounts recovered under regression as well. Betty and Barney Hill, you know.
Yeah, great story there.
Outstanding example of that.
That could be one of the best cases ever. What do you think?
I certainly think it's one of the best. You know, they're driving home late at night on lonely roads, and they notice a light following them. This is a pattern. People driving at night, isolated on the road, suddenly notice a strange light in the sky that doesn't go away and seems to be tracking them. And, the thing came down in the road, and they have their abduction experience, which then, you know, they recover the details of that under regression. But we also have cases where people just see these lights, mystery lights, that seem to track them on the road. And sometimes there are cases of missing time that people notice that, well, it took them a lot longer to get to their destination than they knew it should.
Dramatic work indeed. Rosemary, where do we get the book, The Road to Strange?
It's available on Amazon in print and in bookstores. Michael and I have it on our websites as well, visionaryliving.com and michaelbryan.com. It's an ebook on Kindle, iTunes, Nook, and Kobo.
What do you think of the so-called concept of trans-reality Earth? What is that?
Well, that's a term that I've been using for a while to describe what I feel is already underway. I've called it the interdimensional Earth. I think trans-reality Earth is a better term for it. I believe that our contact experiences, and this may be one of the purposes of them, is altering mass consciousness to become more aware of alternate realities and the beings and places that are in those realities. In other words, our third dimensional reality here on Earth is shifting, and quite dramatically. As more people have experiences, that adds to a collective mass momentum of opening into these alternate realities. And I think that we are going to have increasing contact experiences of all kinds, and that the Earth of the future, and perhaps even the very near future, is going to be very different from this three-dimensional reality that we're in now. It's going to be more fluid. Time is going to be different to us. It's going to be malleable. And we might be able to have increasing contact in the spirit realm as well.
Do you think all of it is for the good?
Everything has a dark side to it. And I think that on one hand, you could say that this is part of what's called the ascension process, the expansion of human consciousness into higher levels of spiritual awareness and emerging with a cosmic consciousness. So that's a good side of it. But there's this dark underbelly, too, that seems to be present. That is, entities and beings who have a more hostile intent. And for reasons unknown, we can only speculate.
All right, hold on for a second, Rosemary. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and take calls next on Coast to Coast AM.